That superb actor, Marlon Brando, will be remembered in the end for one role, as Don Vito Corleone, the Godfather. Of all the gangsters in all those movies, Brando plays the gangster. But that image of a mafia don, true in its time, is now out of date, too narrow. The mafia operates these days under different names, with different rules, in different societies. But from Sicily to New York, from Japan to Russia, mafias are what they always were, crime syndicates. Crime syndicates, as Ryan Gingeris argues in his new book, crime syndicates that shape nations. Ryan Gingeris is a professor in the Institute for Regional and International Studies at the Naval Postgraduate School, California. And his new book is called Mafia, A Global History. Ryan, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Ryan, it might be as well to say right at the start that what you have to say is not the official policy of the Naval Postgraduate School of California, but your own views. Is that correct?
That's right. It's mostly for the fact that as a federal employee, we have this proviso that what we are sharing with you is not official government policy or views.
I'm a federal employee myself, you know, and I feel very much the same. I'm not speaking for the government when I speak on the ABC. Ryan, growing up in New York, does that mean you always knew about the mafia?
In some ways, yeah. As I explained in the book, it's not just growing up in New York, but I'd say more the fact that I'm sixth generation from New York, and about four of those generations have lived in the Bronx. And so it's not just the fact that I come from New York, although I've lived more than half of my life here in California, but it's the fact that it's a big part of the place, the neighborhood where my family's from, where I grew up, where it's a big part of family history. It's a big part of how, in some ways, I was raised, including some of the first books I read, some of the first news stories I remember. So it's always been a part of me in that way, yeah.
Why is the mafia so fascinating? I mean, it's viewed coldly. It is a disgraceful criminal organization. It's responsible for death, corruption, you know, the list of appalling things for which it's responsible. And yet, it has this fascination. Why?
I mean, I don't want to put, you know, world history on the couch and try to analyze it in that way. I mean, one of the things I wanted to try to do with the book in trying to put together a general world history of mafias is to try to put them in the context of history in lots of different places and see why they matter. And I think the shortest answer I can give to you that really important question, but I think it's a complicated answer, the shortest answer I can give you is that mafias matter in the broadest sense of the term, matter to the making of lots of different countries, lots of different societies. They are really emblematic of really important periods of time. They're important in terms of being, a kind of archetype within various societies. And it's probably that latter element that makes them so compelling. I think a lot of people can find them readily identifiable, if not relatable. And I think that's one of the things that's so interesting is that mafia, even as a word, translates across language.
Let me ask you, what is a mafia? I mean, when do a bunch of gangs become a mafia?
The fact of the matter is, people who are experts, I would say specifically, let's say criminologists, tend to shy away from the word because it's a really loaded term. You know, if you read, let's say, a textbook in the study of criminology on organized crime, they tend to shy away from mafia. They tend to use much more technical language, you know, transnational organized crime group. But the fact is, mafia as a word, as a concept, is a powerful one. It invokes gravitas, it invokes power, it invokes a kind of secret, clandestine sort of influence that's really pervasive, but obviously somewhat intangible. Now, for my purposes, the way I define mafias in this book is that mafias are continuous criminal conspiracies. So it's, in other words, it's a collection of people who are committed to committing certain types of crimes over long periods of time, and that conspiracy continues even if, let's say, the personnel within that specific group may change. But it's also something more than that. Mafias, we tend to think of as groups that have a history. They may be usually associated with a culture, a place. There's a sort of mythos around certain groups that we call mafias. And I think that sets it apart from just any group of people out to commit crimes. Mafias are things that have a certain degree of legend about them.
I've suddenly thought, Ryan, do these crooks like to be called a mafia?
You know, it's a really interesting thing that I learned, and I didn't really necessarily suspect when I started writing the book, is that so many groups didn't necessarily think of themselves as being a part of a mafia until they were told that they were a part of a mafia. And what I mean by that is that the word in and of itself really gains greater resonance and parlance in the mid to late 20th century. Before that, you know, if you were to do, let's say, a general word search of English language or French language or Spanish language newspapers, you looked up mafia, you're not going to see a lot of references to mafias or mafias of different types. And the reason for that is that the word in and of itself is a product of late 20th century events and late 20th century culture. And that a lot of these events, which, you know, obviously is a big part of the book, happen in the United States, and a big part of the culture that shapes it, needless to say, you introduced it right off the top, which is The Godfather, which, by the way, the word mafia isn't even uttered in the first Godfather. But, you know, with it, the release of this movie, the word sort of takes on a life of its own. It takes off like wildfire, and it becomes so commonly used, not just towards, let's say, the mafia of Sicily, but towards different types of groups that people think of as being analogous or having, you know, similar tics, or at least, you know, it invokes that kind of image.
And you argue, I mean, you talk beautifully in the book about the origins in Sicily, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But your argument is that it's only when we begin to have modern nation states that mafias can really operate.
The rise of the modern nation state corresponds also to things like the rise of industrialization, the rise of mass migration across the world, the rise of mass print culture, and all of those things contextually shape people's consciousness. It shapes their experiences, and absolutely they are forces that help create things like not simply the mafia in Sicily, but the existence of, let's say, a mafia in the United States, or the kind of presence that mafia-like groups in Asia have in the Americas and elsewhere.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Ryan Gingeris about his new book on the history of the mafia. Ryan, the other thing that came with the modern state were laws forbidding immoral practice. And there was always going to be a market for subverting those laws. Whether it was prostitution or drugs or drink, there was money to be made. And that is now, is it not, kind of the primary work of the mafias?
For me, what's critical in the making of mafias is the creation of modern economies of crime. And the most the succinct way to explain this is that there are certain kinds of goods and services that by the 19th century, you know, had been loosely regulated or maybe inconsistently regulated over the course of long periods of time all over the world. And those would be things like sex, gambling, intoxicants. What we see corresponding to this precise time that we're, you know, talking about, the birth of mafias, which corresponds to birth of nation states, industrialization, the increased globalization of the marketplace, the rise of mass migration. What we also see is an increasingly globalized culture aimed at regulating basic elements of society that are deemed unhealthy, just in the most fundamental ways in which one could define it, unhealthy to a person's physical health, perhaps unhealthy for their character, for those who are around them, but maybe more unhealthy, more profoundly, let's say, to a stable workforce or an efficient workforce. And so therefore, things like prostitution comes under the greater purview of state regulation. Gambling is either regulated or it's outlawed altogether. And then there's the big one, which is intoxicants of different types. And obviously the big one here is narcotics of different varieties. And so, you know, by virtue of creating these laws, obviously, we've had the creation of a kind of underground economy that caters to people who still want these things, who are still, you know, very much, you know, enthusiastic consumers of these things. And it just so happens that groups that come to be associated with this underground economy are groups that we most often not think of as mafias.
Is Pablo Escobar the godfather of the 20th century?
If Pablo was here, he'd probably say he was.
happy to claim the title.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things that makes him so interesting as a character, is that he's arguably the first most prominent underworld figure to be influenced by the Godfather. According to Pablo's brother, Pablo loved the TV show Untouchables and evidently watched it addictively as a kid and loved The Godfather. And then when he became, you know, this really notorious figure associated with the Medellin cartel, he kind of, you know, faked it a bit, as if he was playing the role of the Godfather. He did similar tics and had similar pregnant pauses when he spoke, as if he was fulfilling that role. And so, quite literally, I think he is the most famous Godfather of sorts in the sense of him aspiring to be somebody who's essentially a fictional character.
Ryan, in the modern world, is the influence of mafia on governments, on those governments that kind of reach an accommodation with crime families because they can't or aren't interested in wiping them out?
What we see, again, going from distant history to the present, is states are left to make a choice at certain times. They make a choice that it's either it's too costly to try to suppress certain crime groups. It's not possible, perhaps, to suppress certain types of continuous criminal activity. So consciously or not, they become integrated, perhaps, into the political system. You know, sometimes it's a really coarse decision, quite a deliberate decision. In other cases, it's something that happens somewhat organically. If you're talking about, let's say, a place like Chicago, right, or a place like Marseille, where you have at very specific periods of time criminals like, let's say, an Al Capone or a criminal like Tanny Zampa, who was once the godfather of Marseille. These are individuals who were powerful, they were wealthy, they were imposing, and they made personal connections with local political actors who saw utility in aligning themselves with them. And so in some respects, if you were to talk about Chicago in the 20s, or let's say Marseille in the 60s, 70s, or even in the early 80s, you could sort of say that the mafia was almost like an extension of government or somehow in alignment with government. And for a lot of people, though, that nuance doesn't matter, right? It is the fact that they may seem untouchable and so therefore a part of the legitimate establishment. Now, again, that those sorts of relationships are pretty common. The real question is how enduring often are these relationships? You know, we definitely can point to certain episodes where it's important, but oftentimes what I think the history reveals is that those relationships are fleeting and that those relationships end up being one of convenience as opposed to something that's necessarily institutional. Now, what I close by saying is that in some cases, especially in states that are very weak, institutionally weak, those relationships can go on a lot longer. And I think a case in point here is a place like Mexico, where you see very long-standing relationships between political parties and even arms of the state between, you know, that are based on either kind of raw corruption or mutual dependence in some cases when it comes to kind of the relationship between crime and government.
Ryan, I think there's also been in the public imagination this notion that we'll clean up the mafias. You know, they're a bit old-fashioned. They're grubby, they're criminal. We'll clean them up. But you write in your book, mafias do not come and go. They persevere. And is that your view of the future as well, that they'll be with us for as long as we're around?
I think that there is something about the idea of mafias that still feels really current, even though some of the traditional, quote-unquote traditional mafias now are relatively weak, or at least no longer as imposing as they used to be, whether it's the American mafia or the sort of historical American mafia, or, you know, groups like the Camorra or even the Yakuza in Japan. I think the thing is that, first of all, this concept has so captured people's imagination that it continues to live on as a cultural point of reference. It's also the fact that when we look at how criminals themselves learn about the idea of crime as a profession, they look to mafias. You know, I mean, to the point that there are criminal groups in Mexico that make their members watch the Godfather trilogy, basically to learn how to become a member of the cartel. And that's like, you know, gangster 101. And even though that may sound somewhat silly or facetious, I think that it is very much emblematic of the power of this historical institution, this historical phenomenon, and just how translatable it is. And then you have to consider the fact that, you know, we've not really cracked the code on how to deal with things like drugs, gambling, prostitution, things like that, in terms of effective regulation or in terms of how society should best deal with these phenomena in the effort to try to tamp down on things like mafia. I think, you know, so long as that we're still sort of struggling with these issues, mafias are going to be with us.
And Marlon Brando will be largely to blame.
In part.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
I've been talking to Ryan Gingeras about his new book on the mafia. Ryan is a professor in the Institute for Regional and International Studies at the Naval Postgraduate School in California. His opinions are his own. And his book is now available. Thanks so much.